Red Line.
The bloody carnage in the gay club of Florida, the deadliest mass shooting in U.S. history, raised stakes in the presidential race with Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton clashing on how to handle terrorism, immigrants, and gun control. And this is what we are going to discuss in our second section, Between the Lines, focusing on the most thought-provoking publications of the week. In an article titled, Trump Responds, Obama Was More Angry at Me Than at the Shooter, written by Ben Schreckinger and carried by Political Magazine, it analyzes how the Orlando tragedy is reshaping the political and public debate in the U.S. 5 months before the election. Citing Donald Trump's angry rebuke to President Obama's criticism of his latest comments on Islam, immigrants, and terrorism, Ben Schreckinger writes, Trump alluded to the fact that the perpetrator of Sunday's attack, which left 49 people dead and was the deadliest mass shooting in American history and the most deadly terrorist attack on American soil since 9/11, was the son of Muslim Afghan immigrants. Trump also continued to make the case for restricting the entrance of Muslims into the United States, saying that it took only a small percentage of immigrants from the Middle East to create a significant problem, Schreckinger intones.
Well, Andrew, I think that terrorism has no nationality, and we in Russia condemn the terrorist act in the strongest term, and I want to voice my deep condolences to the families of the victims.
Me too. It's very, very sad what happened.
Carnage. Getting back to the whole tragedy, I think that now America has found itself at another crossroads, because those devastating events in Orlando would not only trigger public debate on what to do with such things, but they can also shape or reshape political landscape in the country, which is moving to presidential election. I think that the basic question is over what can be the, balance between action and inaction. And is there any risk that action or reaction would turn into overreaction? Because if we analyze what presidential hopefuls are saying, it looks that they mostly are involved in the war of words. And I have a feeling that probably while paying ritual tribute to the victims, they're more preoccupied with their political agenda, and they're speaking about some things which are aimed at getting an upper hand in the race, which,
well, there
which
are
is
many
gaining
different
momentum.
Angles. Actions and reactions, and it's
absolutely
a big cycle.
Absolutely. If we look at what Donald Trump is saying, what sounds alarming for me is that his proposals look like an attempt for launching witch hunting. Because when you look at Muslims as a fifth column, when you wake up with a basic feeling of suspicion towards Muslims, then that can, well, project in the public opinion sort of a paranoia at one point. So you point fingers. Who is responsible? Muslims. And this is very dangerous. On the other hand, what Hillary Clinton is talking about, gun control, again, that's a double-edged sword, you know, because the opponents can say that if responsible people have guns, that makes them more safe and secure. And this is quite a strong argument. And you know that it is enshrined in the American Constitution to have guns. So a lot of questions really there.
Yeah, I mean, this is why we're discussing this today on our program. So we're going to speak about this topic first to our in-studio guest, and that's Mr. Vladimir Ivanov. He's head of the East-West Institute's branch here in Russia. So with this tragedy that just transpired, I mean, it's creating a lot of questions. Questions about gun control, immigrants, Muslims. I mean, just the whole fact. I mean, there are also the identity issues of homosexuality, everything going on now. How do you make sense of this? What's the significance? And where is it all headed? Why is this so important right now?
Well, I wanted to point out just to one aspect of the change in the American political consciousness. I was amazed when listening to Donald Trump's recent speech on the aftermath of Orlando tragedy, which was, by the way, transmitted live on Russian central television, which is an amazing fact. It was some 20 minutes.
I didn't know it. That is very interesting.
It was some 20 minutes show, and after that they showed just a short, about 2 minutes clip of Clinton's position. And I was amazed when listening to Trump the way he characterized the relationship to LGBT community. And actually a big sympathy and a big attempt to involve the community and, in a sense, an attempt to transform, to convert the LGBT paranoia or homophobia into Islamophobia. I would say that both community, in a way, are treated in the United States as minorities and, in a sense, as scapegoats. And LGBT used to vote mostly for Democrats, while Muslims in the past used to vote for Republicans. Now it's vice versa. The trend is vice versa. The LGBT community recognizes that Republicans is, and particularly Donald Trump, is somebody who can protect the LGBT community from aggression on behalf of particularly the various kinds of radicals. While the Muslims are more and more sensing that their protection comes from Democrats. So this is kind of a, I would say, in words of Tolstoy, everything has mixed up in the in Oblonsky's house.
This is a very interesting observation that you make. So basically, so if I understand you correctly, sounds like, you know, the gay community is going to be voting towards Republicans, and the Muslim community will be voting more towards Democrats, then, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Joining us on the program right now is Mr. Fred Veer. He's head of the Moscow Bureau of the Christian Science Monitor.
Red Line.
Hello, Mr. Veer. How are you today?
Not bad, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. You know, as you know, we're discussing the tragedy in Orlando and the political hubbub that's blown up afterwards about so many different topics. And one thing I wanted to ask you about is kind of a scandal that many people have noticed is developing, and that's over Hillary Clinton's relationship with the gay community. I mean, most people would think conventional knowledge states Democrats are very friendly towards that community, yet Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation accepted tens of millions of dollars from the Gulf Kingdoms, where they behead you and actually crucify you for being homosexual. So what can you tell us about this? How will Hillary's very twisted or rather complicated relationship between gay community and the Gulf, if you will, play out with the election? And what will be the repercussions domestically?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be a particular problem for Hillary. I mean, you're stretching there. I don't think that a lot of gay Americans really look at this issue, their issues, in a foreign policy context. It's perfectly true, I mean, that Hillary has all these connections, but she does say the right things domestically to the gay community. And it's Donald Trump who will have the problems because he has tried to say a lot of the right things, but he comes across as quite insensitive. So I don't think in that respect Hillary is really going to suffer in terms of Orlando.
Okay, what I'd like to ask you then, I mean, since you brought up Mr. Donald Trump, is, I mean, some reports have said that, you know, the gay community now, they're buying guns, you know, in California and Florida and so on and so forth. And as you know, Donald Trump is very very friendly towards the Second Amendment, whereas there's a lot of talk that Hillary Clinton wants to restrict the Second Amendment. And it seems like kind of, you know, the interest of that community is kind of shifting. And now we have the gun control issue coming up on top of, you know all the other issues. So how would you comment on the gun control issue in the wake of Orlando, and how do you think it's shaping American discourse, both politically and socially?
Yeah, this is a critical question, and I recall, and I'm sure you recall, these mass shootings are a regular feature of American life, and every time a really big or particularly horrifying one happens, we have this moment in which people ask, is it time for gun control? And some people even, you know, make great efforts, and nothing happens. In fact, as you say, people run out and buy guns. And I am not surprised that even in the gay community, they're now getting paranoid, and they have very good reasons to have those feelings of fear and terror and going out and buying guns. These mass shootings do play to the ugliest features in America. And, you know, these shootings happen, the moment of horror passes, and nothing, no political consequences so far have occurred. And I'd like to think that this particular episode, it was the worst mass shooting on American soil. I'd like to think that it will shake things loose. But the cynic in me says it's not likely.
Fred, let me ask you about another problem which can be described as homegrown terrorism. You know that this guy, while he's from a family of Afghans, he was raised in New York. So now any tragedy comes as a shock to the nation, which is looking at authorities and asking, do something. What can be done with such things? You never know when all of a sudden such guy can take a gun and start shooting.
Yeah, this particular episode has created, I mean, it has played into different streams of paranoia in America. I mean, it has exercised the gay community in terrible way and made them feel persecuted. And it, because he was a Muslim and because he did make that phone call pledging allegiance to ISIS, he has played into the radical Islamic terrorist fears. And so, you know, it has really stirred the pot and roiled the waters and all that. And it will create many, many streams of political repercussions. But the thing to me is that, you know, there is more than one mass shooting a day on average in the United States. It's just an amazing statistic. More than one a day. They have to be really big to make the kind of headlines this one has. But it is a common feature of American life, and people go and kill people for a wide variety of motives. And they get massive attention when it's a hate crime or a terrorist crime. But the thing is, they all have this same characteristic. One guy, maybe with his wife, and a lot of weapons, really high-powered, sophisticated weapons, kill as many people as they possibly can. And this is some American thing that makes the hate crime aspect or the Islamic terrorist aspect irrelevant when you look at the big picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are very sad and sobering thoughts, Mr. Veer, and I want to thank you for expressing them with us and to our audience. Right now, we're going to have to switch over to the other guest that we have on the line today, and that's Mr. Alex Braterski. He's political commentator at Gazeta.ru online publication.
Red Line.
Hello, Mr. Braterski. How are you today?
Yes. Hi. Actually, yes. It's a great. We actually having this discussion.
Yeah.
I bring my deepest sorrow to American people, and I love this country. I live in the United States, and I actually feel it's a big tragedy. 50 people died over one day, and actually, that's sad. It became almost a common feature. I lived in the United States in the 90s during Bill Clinton, and it was a pretty safe country. You know, and now you almost have a shooting daily, and it became a routine, like President Obama has said. So I think this is a terrible tragedy, and things should actually be, reconsidered with their arm staying.
Yeah, what I want to ask you about, I mean, you mentioned that many things should be reconsidered, and I mean, what exactly did you mean? I mean, were you referring to the Second Amendment or immigration? What exactly?
I can say about Second Amendment. You know, yesterday I looked at the American Constitution Bill of Rights, and I'm sorry, I love American Constitution. I think it's very democratic. But, you know, the Second Amendment, it looks like it's written by, some kind of a deputy Fyodorov from the Russian parliament, because if you read the Second Amendment twice or three times, it's pretty bizarre. It says, like, organized militia is needed, and the right for protection is, like, everyone should have. So it means you should be a part of an organized militia to defend the country, or the rights to bear arms. Because, I mean, I know the Supreme Court in the United States made that decision saying, like, every American has a right to have a gun. But, you know, at the time of, like, founding fathers, there were different kinds of guns, actually. So the rights for Americans to have their guns should not be sacrificed. And I'm not a, you know, deep down kind of pacifist, but what I can say, you know, we have to ban, you know, United States government, of course, should ban automatic rifles. That should be banned. Because let's say if a killer comes over to a nightclub and wants to kill people, he's a bad guy, Islamist, a radical, a fascist, means he has a pump rifle or a gun. He can be overpowered by some of the guys who've been there. But, you know, it's very difficult if people, per person shoots like AK-47 or that machine gun he had. So when President Clinton was president, there was a ban for automatic rifles. And actually, that actually contributed to a lot of safety. And I know President Clinton, I might not like her or some features, what she has on American politics, but I think she has a lot of good plans for banning automatic rifles. And I think it's not about take all the guns from Americans. This is their right. But why don't we find a better solution for, I mean, you still can't defend your family if you have a Colt rifle, Magnum gun, or a pump rifle, like Schwarzenegger used to have in a Terminator. But still, automatic guns should be banned.
Yeah, I mean, we bring up some very contentious points, but I would just like to remind our listeners, of course, that, you know, there also are terrorist attacks with hatchets, like the Uyghur terrorists in China. They, you know, occasionally go into train stations and just chop people up. But yeah, you do have some very, very good points when you talk about how the population could resist. I mean, how could anyone resist when an automatic gun is being fired into a crowd? So right now, we're all out of time, Mr. Baterski. I thank you very much for bringing up these issues. I mean, they're very important, and I'm very eager to see how our audience responds. Thank you very much for that. And right now, we just have to wrap everything up with Sergey. You know, as you see, I mean, we have this tragedy has opened up such a Pandora's box of topics. I mean, very controversial ones: Second Amendment, immigration. We also have the whole idea of homegrown terrorism, online radicalization. I mean, it's a tragedy in many ways. But now it seems like now it's becoming politics.
I think we had thought-provoking debate. I don't think we were able to find the answers to the questions which are still up in the air.
You might never be able to find the answers.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that the main conclusion which I can drive from the discussion is that nothing is written in stone. And while the right to have arms is enshrined in American Constitution, I think what Mr. Braterska was pointing out over the vague language of American Constitution is very important. Probably it needs some sort of at least fine-tuning.
Well, it's supposed to be a living document, but this will eventually go into the legal realm, of course. I'm certain of it, especially if Obama issues another executive order on the topic. So we're going to thank everybody for participating, beginning with their in-studio guest, Mr. Vladimir Ivanov. He's head of the East-West Institute's branch here in Russia. Mr. Fred Vare, head of the Moscow Bureau of the Christian Science Monitor. And Mr. Alex Braterski, political commentator at Gazeta.ru online publication. Following in our program, we have Nicolas Maduro battling to safeguard Chavez's legacy.